You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 27 June, UK car production data released earlier this morning, year on year, down 32.8%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Skull Glow, PSG Old Oak. I want to touch on the Thungela update, but then it's been a year, right? We're kind of almost halfway. It's been a year. And then we're going to be chatting with Sunlam Umbrella Solutions, their key findings from their 2025 benchmark survey, and thoughts from me on Trump's beef with Jerome Powell. Can he fire him? Should he fire him? We've kind of been down this road before. Hello, 1970s. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from My Broadband. Bank Zero sells for 1.1 billion rand. Bank Zero founder Michael Jordan announced that Laseka bought their bank for 1.1 billion pending regulatory approvals. There are going to be a lot of regulatory approvals. Business Day. Gold boosts reserves as market waits to see if Treasury will tap the GFE CRA profits. The agreement in the Golden Foreign Exchange Contingency Reserve account allows for annual transfers if further profits build up on the account. Remember, we tapped it last year. Morning markets, the US was green. S&P up 0.8%, NASDAQ up 0.9%. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney down 0.6%. Tokyo's up 1.5%. Hong Kong, slightly green, 0.03% higher, and 10% off 0.2%. Commodities mostly green, the exception gold futures, $3,314 an ounce. The rest is green. Brent at 68.07, platinum 1,403, and palladium 1,161. The rand is 17.84. It was sub 17.60 at one point yesterday. Bitcoin 107,400. Top 40 opening call, green open, 250 points, or a little under a third of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skulk Lowe. You find him, of course, at PSG Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the early morning. Thungela, let's quickly start there. They had an update. I think it was their AGM they were at. A lot of moving parts. I mean, the one thing, it does look like Transnet is a little better, but it was still a tough update for them. Coal prices just not helping.
Yeah. I mean, if you sell a commodity and the commodity drops by, you know, 16% in rand terms, you're gonna have a horrible time. But you started off with the good news. I mean, we tend to be always been harsh on ourselves, harsh on South Africans, harsh in what we produce in South Africa. And they actually mentioned in this results that the Transnet, our volumes increased by 7%. And they actually referred to it. There was fewer security issues. It was better locomotive availability. Man, I think we should high five each other because that is you know, short term victories. We need this. I mean, I listened while you were reading the commodity prices. Platinum price over $1,400. I mean, in May, now we're talking about May last month, it was still trading $950. Here we're sitting $1,400. Now, why is that important? I mean, we're the largest or second largest platinum producer, largest palladium producer, largest rhodium producer in the world. You want your locomotives to work. Yep. Over time, and I think that's a small short-term victory. But back to Thungela. I mean, yeah, as I mentioned, they mentioned in there the average coal price it's got year to date, currently trading at $91.74 per ton, falling from $105.30 last year this time around. Like I mentioned, in rand terms, that's more or less 16% drop. So that's bad. But I mean, they did mention, you know, how they're still sitting with a massive cash pile, around about $6 billion. They're still buying back their own shares. That's telling us usually the company has got confidence in the own company, and they still manage to pay you know, more or less 1.5 billion rands worth of dividends this year. So You mentioned it at the beginning, gold prices not helping them. It doesn't seem, I'm sitting with this graph in front of me, doesn't seem like it's going to be turning anytime soon. But for now, it seems like they're still holding the fort. I'll talk about the year-to-date performances a little bit later because I know what's coming.
Yeah, so what's coming is, so Monday will be the month end, the quarter end, and of course mid-year. You typically, at the close of the period, do a I don't know what we call it, a tweet-a-thon or something like that. The point being is, I mean, if you'd been asleep for 6 months, you'd wake up and you'd see your US indices up mid-single digits, South Africa doing nice, gold running, but you've missed a ton within the noise. But all things considered, I think we'll take where we are at mid-year.
Yeah, I'll take this any day around. I mean, for the listeners out there that don't know where we're at, we're sitting half year, you know, halfway through the year, and as we sit here with JSE again, year to date, we're not talking about the 12 month return. We're talking about year to date. Remember, 12 months, we're sitting at 26% growth, and if we went into 2025, and you would have told me midway through 2025, we would see. Not just the current wars still very much. We would see a lot of geopolitical unrest. We would see things like tariffs. We would see a very, very uncomfortable. But you can take 16% year-to-date growth. I would say, where do I sigh? Where do I sigh? So yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, it was a great year for South African stocks. And why I say that, I already mentioned our PGM stocks. We're more or less the eighth largest gold producer in the world. So when I look at the top 10 best performers this year, it's pretty much dominated by these gold and platinum counters. Sibanye, 106% year to date. Anglo Gold, 102%. Northern Platinum, 89%. Gold Fields, 76%. Impala, 75%. I mean, what a year! The only real, you know, gold and platinum counters in there is our telcos.
Yeah.
I mean, MTN. Yeah, that's quite a big surprise. I saw MTN again making a 12-month high yesterday, 48% year-to-date, and Telkom, and one that's been struggling, 44.5%. So it's been a good year for let's call it our typical South African stocks. On the flip side, the stocks that's been struggling in 2025 is the companies that's really been doing well. Pretty much that latter part of 2024, everybody thought that these two pots is going to have these massive effect on our clothing retailers. So our clothing retailers is taking a bit of a breather after a great run end of last year. In a Truist down 29%. We've got Mr. Price down 26%. Fushini Group 25%. So you can see the general trend. And I'm going to end off where I started by saying that one of the worst performers naturally was Thungela. Thungela year to date currently trading at just over 27%. So yeah, you can see this. There's this the lower coal price definitely eating into the performances.
Yeah, but I take a point. We will absolutely take this with all of our hands and more. And I suppose the key lesson is, don't worry when markets get crazy. There's still always money to be made. That's Skalklo, PSG Auto. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today. Is about those markets. How's your portfolio done so far in 2025? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter, and follow Skalk on Twitter. He'll do his month-end, quarter-end, half-year roundup on Monday. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Nzwa Shunwana. He is Managing Executive, Sunlam Umbrella Solution. Nzwa, I appreciate the time today. Sunlam's just released their 2025 benchmark survey. Before we dig into some of the details, what is the survey? How's it conducted? As I understand, this has been going for more than 40 years now.
Correct. And yeah, thanks for having me. So basically, we've got a survey where we interviewed 70 standalone funds across the retirement fund industry. And this year, we managed to interview 168 participating employers in umbrella funds. Now, I guess what's important is that these are not participating employers, you know, in the Sunlam umbrella fund only. Mm-hmm. So we try and get as much respondents from across the industry in competing umbrella funds as well. And in addition to this, what we've done this year, which has been ongoing for the past 2-3 years, is that we also interview consumers who are, you know, employed individuals who contribute to the company retirement fund. And we managed to interview 506 consumers. So it's standalone funds, participating employers and umbrella funds, and consumers.
Okay, so a really wide sample group on it. A lot of data coming out of it, unsurprisingly. The one that perhaps stood out to me, almost half of those surveyed called for retirement education from as early as school age. And I got to say, I see that kind of two sides of the coin. The one side is that we're not doing enough education, and it's the royal we as an industry. The other side is that consumers are perhaps aware of this and wanting more, which is a positive light to something.
I agree. So where that came through was mostly from the standalone funds as well as the employer funds, the participating employers that we interviewed. Mm-hmm. I guess what's really happening in our industry is that we know that members are struggling and they're headed towards a retirement where they won't have enough in retirement. And the stats haven't changed for a very long time. So the shifts that we're seeing in the industry from employers is mostly around the fact that education might be one lever which we can collaborate in the industry and maybe improve these retirement outcomes. So that's the sort of question that we had asked, and there's definitely consensus that if we equip members with additional information, the right communication, they might make, you know, better decisions, which will ultimately have an impact on their final retirement outcome. And a perfect example is just, you know, dip into your two-pot savings if it's an emergency, not just for luxuries.
Yeah, a great point. And the two-pot's a great innovation, but to your point, it's emergencies. It's not exotic holidays. The flip side, and you absolutely alluded to it there, 42% of retirement fund members believe they're on track to save enough. I mean, that does mean that there's a lot who don't. 43% think they'll maintain the current standard of living. In both those numbers, half of respondents are expecting retirement to either have to be later delayed or drop in standard of living. And that perhaps is the crux of it.
Correct. And Simon, you know, from our side, this is the respondents themselves saying they think, you know, they're on track to retire comfortably. But from the stats that we've got just on our own internal umbrella fund, which is over 355,000 members, it's as much as 6% only who are on track to retire comfortably. And, you know, retire comfortably for us is that if you can replace 75% of your final salary as a pension, that's what we'd call, you know, a comfortable retirement. So as much as we're seeing as high as 42%, we're convinced that if we were to look at their numbers in terms of what they currently have in their retirement pot, how far they are from retirement, what their salary is, and how much of that salary they're going to be able to replace, this number would drop drastically from the 42% you just mentioned.
Gotcha. It's a self-reporting number, which, as you say,
might not reflect
the reality. You'd mentioned two-pot. You said the survey comes 92% are aware of the two-pot system. It's a staggeringly high number. 44% who withdrew used it to pay off debt. And I have to say, I'm betwixt and betweened about that. In the one sense, debt is better than a holiday. The concern is, of course, is you just go back into debt, and it actually, I was going to say, perpetuates the cycle. It worsens it because you've taken retirement money for today's spending, in a sense. And that perhaps is one of the big red flags out of this.
I totally agree. From our side, when this came out, I guess the one thing that we're looking at was to try and pinpoint exactly where people are spending their emergency savings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously some of the perceptions that exist in our industry is people have used this for luxuries. But it was amazing to see the number of people who confirmed that it was to pay off debt as well as living expenses. But you're spot on. When we got the data, you know, the first reaction from our side was to say, as much as people are paying off debt, which is a good thing, we all know that, you know, debt is not just a financial issue. There are psychological issues that come in play. So that is a good thing, given, you know, financial stress mostly comes from the debt that people have. But what we sort of also picked up from this in terms of the high number of people that confirmed that they're paying off debt is that people are probably sitting with very high interest debt, that they were willing to pay the tax that comes with, you know, two-pot savings, pot withdrawals, just to pay off the debts that they have. So that's probably something that we need to probe further. But I think, you know, it's quite obvious from the data that people are sitting with debts that is affecting them from a financial stress perspective, which obviously has an impact on their, you know, overall well-being and mental health.
That's a great point, particularly if it's high interest debt. But I take your point. Debt can affect you more than just in the wallet. It can hurt with your mental well-being, and that's hugely important as well. Nearly half of members
unaware of post-retirement options. And this is something I've often thought of. There's a lot of literature, and to the point your survey says people are looking for more information. There's a lot around the process of getting to retirement, the saving part, etc. There's perhaps a great lack of information about what happens at that point when we turn 65 years old, we take our retirement, what are the options available to them? And it must be, I mean, it's a big decision because this, you're sitting with the biggest pile of money you've ever had.
I agree. And another stat that I think reinforced this call for more education, more communication and professional financial advice. And I guess, you know, another stat that was linked to the comment you've just made was that majority of consumers actually confirmed that they only seek professional advice, you know, 9 years from retirement.
Yeah.
Which for us obviously speaks to the point that, you know, if you're only seeking professional financial advice at that stage, it means you don't know what the options are when you get to retirement. And if you're seeking professional financial advice 9 years from retirement, most of the time, it's not enough. You don't have enough time to make a meaningful impact on your retirement outcomes. If you're already headed towards poor retirement outcomes, within 9 years, it's going to be extremely difficult to make meaningful changes, simply because we know that members are struggling financially. So they're going to struggle to make huge additional contributions towards their retirement savings. But legislation has come in. You know, we've got in-fund solutions, which are meant to be cheaper. Trustee-endorsed, you know, in-fund solutions when people get to retirement. But clearly, legislation has come in. Trustees have implemented. The message has not gotten out to members where it should be sitting.
Yeah, but I like your point. We need to take control and more than just make the payment, but engage in the process a long way out from retirement. And I get the point. You're in your 50s, you think it's a way to go, but compounding is important. And sooner rather than later, we'll leave it there. Sunzwa Shanori, he's Managing Executive, Sunlam Umbrella Solution. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So Donald Trump has been hating on Jerome Powell again, the Fed chair, wants him to cut rates, wants to fire him. Thing is, Jerome Powell's not set to leave until May next year, remembering, of course, that Powell was appointed by Trump in his first term. The question is, can he fire him? And the answer is no. Well, he can, for cause. There has been precedent, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, but it must be based on specific reasons. Misconduct, incapacity are some of those. He could try a misconduct, but it will be tied up in the courts and probably be resolved post his term end in May. But the bigger issue is central bank independence and the importance of it. We saw significant dollar weakness yesterday as Trump was once again threatening Powell. Turkey tried to interfere. Well, no, they didn't try. They succeeded. They interfered with their central banker. President insisted rates must be cut in the face of high inflation, insisted that the central bank support the currency. And that went as expected. It just went ugly. It did not work. But perhaps a bigger lesson is the U.S. in the 70s. Richard Nixon, then President Richard Nixon, pressured Federal Reserve Chairman Arthur Burns to cut rates and pursue an expansionary monetary policy in the lead-up to the 1972 presidential election. And it's quite simple. You want those lower rates because you want debt to cost less and therefore voters will like you. What followed was, frankly, the toughest decade since the 30s for the U.S. Now, sure, there was an oil embargo. That didn't help. But every time inflation sort of started to come down a little bit, there'd be an aggressive cutting of rates and it would rally again. And the inflation did. It ran away. It got out of control. And finally, Carter in 1979 appointed Paul Volcker as chair of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. And that's when things started to get right. He hiked rates. He ultimately broke inflation. It got to 18%, but he did get it down. Now, sure, Trump wants lower rates as part of his bigger plan, and he'll continue to put the pressure. All presidents want lower rates, but it's not going to work on Jerome Powell. He's not going to buckle. And the next chair, which will be in May of next year, we'll see. Let's hope by then Trump sees some sense and realizes that actually Fed independence is perhaps more important than low rates. That's it for today. I was chatting with Chantal Marks yesterday, F&B Wealth and Investments, talking around the Magnificent Seven and the fears at the start of the year that they were overvalued. Yet, Well, most are holding up just fine. We asked you, did you hold onto your Mag 7 stocks? Over half said yes, loving them. 20% said no Mag 7 for you. Rest split between I've been adding and some saying no, you had sold. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubuhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Foresight results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.